Hello and welcome to Giant Mess, a super sloppy sports and entertainment talk show that's hosted by a Giant Mess. That's me, the real cinch, Neil Lynch. On this here pod, we like to talk New York Giants football, Mets baseball, movies, TV, and comedy. I like to mix in some life lessons and funny stories along the way. On today's episode, The Iron Claw, starring Zac Efron and Jeremy Allen White from The Bear and Shameless. Without further ado, let us get started up in here. Got to watch The Iron Claw. I didn't even realize I had been wanting to see... Quick backstory. I wanted to see this when it came out in theaters in December. I wanted to see it with my then girlfriend, and I never got around to it. And I was kicking myself the whole time because I was like... And now it feels like almost every weekend leading up to this past weekend, I was like, when the fuck is this movie going to be available to rent? Or when am I going to be able to see it on the streamers, dude? And it turns out, I just so happened to find out that it was streaming on HBO Max because it is an A24 film. Which after watching the movie, I was like, whoa, wait a second. A24? This does not really feel like an A24 movie. Much like I didn't think Civil War, when I reviewed that, had elements of A24, but it didn't feel like, okay, this is A24. So it feels like they are not pivoting per se, but they're kind of leaning more into the less quirky, less indie, more mainstream type shit, which I don't mind. You know, if they can do what they did with Civil War and the Iron Claw, then I think we're all have only good things are in store. So the Iron Claw, in case you didn't know, true story of the inseparable Von Erich brothers who made history in the intensely competitive world of professional wrestling in the early 1980s. So more backstory, I guess, context. I'm not like a diehard wrestling fan, pro wrestling fan. I was, I want to say late 80s to early 90s, mid 90s, a little bit of late 90s. So it was basically like from the age of like six or seven, definitely eight to 18 or 19. So it's a solid 10 or 11, 12 years. Where it was like I followed it pretty strongly. Like we would get the pay-per-views. You know, my uncle was and is like a huge wrestling fan. So you know, when I used to live in Cranston, you know, which is a suburb of Providence, like anytime they came to the Civic Center there, which I don't know what it's called now, but it was like we'd go. We were there for sure. I don't think they were televised. There was a word called, what do they call them? House shows, I believe, never televised, but still great to watch. So I don't know all the ins and outs, all the details of professional wrestling history. This is coming from more of a, I guess, a casual fan. The only Von Erich that I knew was Kerry Von Erich, who is the, I guess you would say, the most successful one. He ended up becoming the Texas Tornado in the WWF, and that's how I knew him, as the Texas Tornado. And I was like, and so I remember, you know, when I found out more about him, I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like he was the most popular wrestler in this other league, in this other whatever federation. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. And I didn't do a whole lot of research. I just remember seeing the trailer for this and I was like, fuck yes. And then I saw Zac Efron and I was like, holy shit, dude. Like Zac Efron. Cool. I wish he would get nominated for an award for this. I don't know. I don't think it's going to happen. But it should have happened. Did he get nominated? I don't think he did. But I don't know. I think he should have, because the physical transformation, not that it's really a transformation per se. But I went into this thinking that he was Kerry Von Erich, that he was playing Kerry Von Erich. And it was like, no. It turns out he's not. He's playing the second oldest son of Fritz, the patriarch of the family, Kevin Von Erich. And I don't think he did. Let me look it up real quick. Nope. Best Ensemble, San Diego Film Critics Society, Austin Film Critics. Yeah. Best Actor of the Year at the Golden Schmoes Award. I think that's a good thing. best actor nominee, Music City Film Critics. Discussing Film Critics, Chicago Indie Critics. Yeah, so it doesn't, Best Lead Performance, Columbus Film Critics. Yeah, it's a lot of Film Critics associations. I don't know that he's nominated for a bunch of awards, none of them major, but I think because this came out in December that we've already passed his window to be nominated. So I don't know. I don't know shit apparently, but I do think that he gave an amazing performance and just based on his physical and like I said, not really transformation because he's always been shredded. And he's always been muscular. Like you watch the Baywatch movie and you're like, all right, this dude is fucking, he's shredded. He's just shredded. And then this one, he's bulked up a considerable amount. Like he looks like a fucking pro wrestler. That being said, you can still tell he's on the smaller side. Like how big is Zac Efron? I feel like he's not that big. Is he? I don't think he is. Yeah, he's 5'8". Holy fuck. Yeah, he's 5'8". That does not sound right. He's 5'8". That is basically the biggest knock that I could have for this movie. Is that you have Jeremy Allen White playing Cary Von Erich, okay? And you have Zac Efron playing Kevin Von Erich. Respectively, Jeremy Allen White's 5'7", and you could tell. I mean, it was like, and they didn't do anything really to mitigate that or to change your perception of that. It was never like, all right, we're going to, almost like they do with Tom Cruise. Although now I think about it, they could have done more, I think. And they did do a lot there are a lot of shots, especially early on, where they're very close up on Zac Efron as Kevin Von Erich. So you can see like just the definition in his back and the bulges and the vascularity and like all that. You can see the physicality and it takes up the whole frame. And that's to make you, I guess subconsciously, but also be like, just take notice of like, this is a massive big dude. But then you have shots of him in the ring with other wrestlers and other people. When you're first introduced to Jeremy Allen White as Cary Von Erich, like he's on the Olympics team, and this is the Olympics that got where the U.S. Jimmy Carter said the U.S. couldn't go. So you can tell even that scene, you know, they have like his two trainers or coaches come over and they're like towering over him. And you're saying, okay, well, if you're not familiar with how, like Cary Von Erich was 6'2". And I think in the movie, they say that Kevin Von Erich is like 6'1", 6'2", 2 something. That's what they listed him as. And to have him played by a 5'8 guy and a 5'7 guy, it's just noticeable. Now, did it completely detract from the movie? No, but it's like I kind of had to actively be like, because even Jeremy Allen White, again, I don't want to say transformation because like neither Zac Efron or Jeremy Allen White are like these scrawny fucks, right? Although I'd say Jeremy Allen White, I didn't know he had it in him. Like Zac Efron, I'm not too surprised. At first, you know, I was kind of like, took me aback, like, whoa, Zac Efron is fucking yoked in this movie. But then I thought, and I'm like, well, yeah, he's got that potential, I guess, like just to go hog wild. Jeremy Allen White, I didn't know he had it in him. Like Jeremy Allen White put on a lot of bulk and muscle. And, you know, again, if he's 6'2", it's like the perfect, I think it's almost the perfect casting choice. I'm not completely on board the Jeremy Allen White Express, like a lot of people are after watching The Bear and Shameless. But it was kind of touch and go throughout this movie. You know, I think Zac Efron gives an amazing performance. Like I said, I shocked he wasn't nominated for more awards. I thought Harris Dickinson as David Von Erich, the third oldest son who had a really close relationship with Kevin. I thought he had an amazing performance. Jeremy Allen White is almost like, in terms of best performances, is like fifth, sixth. It just felt like a lot of times I felt like I was watching like, and this is going to sound harsh, And it's not exactly that. After school special TV movie of the week-esque performance. That, I mean, it sounds really bad, but it's like he wasn't bad. It's just in terms of like the other performances were better. And I just remember watching, I think it might have been the scene where he had just won the Intercontinental Championship in the WWF. He comes home for Christmas with some woman, and he had gotten his dad a gun, Fritz, because Fritz had like this huge, you know, glass cabinet where he stores all his weapons, which is, that's a thing. You know, I've told this before, but my brother-in-law's father, you know, the first time I went over there to their house, I went inside, and it was like, it's literally their coffee table. Like, their coffee table is full of weapons, and it's, you know, you can see in it, there's like a full, like, you know, a china cabinet that's just all weapons. It's pretty damn cool, but it's also like, ooh, this could get ugly. So that scene with Jeremy Allen White as Kerry Von Erich is like, it just felt very like, okay, this is making me think this is not where it should be, I guess. Yeah. But looking back on it now, I understand what he was going for, I think. But I just didn't click. Like, Zac Efron clicked. Harrison Dickinson clicked. Jeremy Allen White. And maybe just because I'm not as familiar with Kerry Von Erich, like, out of all the Von Erichs, I'm most familiar with Kerry Von Erich. So I thought, oh, I like have a pretty good grasp and sense of who he was. But now that I think about it, it's like, I know what he looks like. I know what he did in the WWF. And I know his general demeanor, but I don't know how he acted, behaved, talked, whatever. So it's possible that he was spot on. It didn't come across that way. So, oh my God. And, you know, when he gets into that, well, we'll get to it, I guess. Lily James as Pam. She played Pam Anderson, and Pam and Tommy did a spectacular job. I want to say she should have been nominated for awards. If she wasn't, that's the goddamn travesty. But she was pretty awesome throughout this movie. So goddamn forward. That first scene where they meet, you know, it makes me, so Kevin Von Erich is like, he's not smooth. He's not charismatic. And they definitely had a lot of scenes where it's very evident that he's not this kind of charismatic dude that can win over the crowd. You know, there's a scene where he is supposed to, or the first scene that you see this is the promo, but is it the promo or is it this scene? One of the two. You just see that he's just not charismatic. He doesn't have a way with words. You know, she has to basically like throw herself at him to get him to realize like, hey, I'm into you. I'm flirting with you. This is flirting. And usually when you're flirting, you talk and you ask questions and all that stuff. So the fact that she was able to pursue that and go through with that is, I don't know, tremendous foresight, a huge risk, taking a huge risk. I don't know. But yeah, so that scene was funny and interesting because it's like, oh, he just doesn't know how to act, interact with people and win people over or be charismatic. And then I guess that was either the next scene or the scene before that where he gets, oh, it's got to be after that. He gets a matchup with Harley Race, which is like huge because if he puts on a good show, then they can take his dad's wrestling league organization to the next level. Like right now, they're kind of like a local show where it's only one venue. They do two shows a night or something like that, but it's getting a lot of popularity. And so the fact that they're having Harley Race now come in, who's an NWA champion, I think, which is a much greater, bigger organization. And, you know, if he's able to put on a good show, then they're able to possibly get a rematch and then like get televised, get a contract, et cetera, et cetera. and he puts on a decent, good show, but then tries to get it on the mic afterwards and is stuttering, much like he does in the promo. Like in the promo where he's talking with the interviewer, who is, was he the warden or like the one of the head honchos in Orange is the New Black? He was like the warden, I think. No, he was like the head prison guard in Orange is the New Black. Anyway. So, and he actually did a really great job as like the interviewer, broadcaster, commentator, announcer. I thought he really nailed it. And so he, you know, they cut promos, right? It's where they interview the wrestler and he's like talks trash and like cuts a promo where you've seen them. Like Ric Flair had the best out there. Macho Man had great promos. And I don't know. It's a lost art, I guess. I don't really watch wrestling anymore, but I don't feel like you get those level of promos anymore like you did back then. But anyway, he tries to cut a promo and it's like he can't find the words. He's stuck. His brother David comes in and is just like laughing at him. And he's like, you're so smart. You come out here and do it. And he's like, no, I'm fine. So during that, after that match with Harley Race, it's like, this is your moment to step it up, Kevin, and deliver this awesome, you know, speech that's going to win over the crowd and pump you up to the next level. So even though he's technically sound in the ring and is a great wrestler in the ring and puts on a great show physically, verbally, he's not quite there. And so his brother David takes the mic and is way better on the mic. And so his father recognizes that and is just like, okay, I think I know what's happening here and I think I know what's going on. So he ends up putting all his stock into David instead of Kevin, because he feels like Kevin disappointed, especially after the, I guess it was the match with Ric Flair. No. Yeah. He just lost faith in Kevin. And then Carrie, after the Olympics are not canceled, but after the US pulls out of the Olympics due to the Iran situation. Forget. Big history buff over here. So he comes back home and he's like, what do you think about wrestling? And the way that Fritz, so the guy that plays Fritz, his name, the actor's name is Holt McElhinney, who was in that show Mindhunter that only ran for a season or two. I think it was two seasons. Great fucking series. I mean, everyone to this day is so pissed that it's got canceled. It's one of the few videos I have on YouTube where people are still coming to watch it. I was like, oh, okay. But he was great in that show. He's great in this movie. And I mean, this is a classic example of who the guy is. You know, he sees all his sons working together on the farm. He comes up to Carrie and he's like, I'm not here to pressure you or anything. But it's essentially him pressuring him into wrestling. And so Carrie's like, yeah, sure. Like he has a, so their oldest son died when he was young. I don't know how old, 11 or 12, maybe. Kevin's the second oldest. And then you have Carrie is third. No, it was the fourth oldest. So David is next in line. He's the third oldest. Then Carrie's fourth oldest. And then Michael is the youngest son. And so Michael doesn't want to be a wrestler, really. He wants to get into music. The mother, played by Maura Tierney, who I've always loved, plays the mother to them, and the wife. She's like, well, your father, you know, people don't know this, but your father used to play the clarinet and was going to get a scholarship to blah, 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 but ended up playing football instead. And so that's what they think is going on. Michael's like, yeah, you can play your music, but like, you're going to be a wrestler. Which he doesn't want to do. But we also, early on in the movie, because of that death of the oldest son, you know, Kevin, when he's on his date with Pam, is like, yeah, there's a curse. We're cursed. People say we're cursed, but I don't believe it. So that's an amazing character arc. That, like, is he... You start to believe in the curse, basically, over the course of the movie. You're like, this is like tragedy after tragedy after tragedy, like bad freak accident after bad freak accident. And so, like, as he goes from, oh, I don't believe it, but you could tell, like, there's a hint of, like, he does believe it a little bit, and he's just in denial, to full-blown, like, I'm now married to Pam, we have a baby, but I can't come home because I don't want you to get it, quote-unquote, as if it's, like, a disease or a virus, and they're going to catch it. He's like, I don't want you to catch it. Like, that's how far it goes, that his belief in the curse. And I don't fucking blame him, dude. I mean, David, so after his dad, like, pushes David and promotes David, is like, David's our guy. David then, he's like, lays it all out on the line. He's like, David's going to feud with Ric Flair over the next blah, blah, blah. He's going to go over to Japan, wrestle Flair there, and he's going to come back, and he's going to wrestle him in Dallas at this thing, and that's where he's going to take the belt. I was just like, holy shit, they have this all planned out for David, who, I guess up until that point, was just a part of a three-man tag team. It was Kevin, David, and Kerry. But he was, I guess, the best on the mic. And so that's when his dad was like, I'm going to push you to rise to the top. And so he ends up going and I guess, you know, like most professional wrestlers, they go through, I mean, they have so many goddamn shows where it's physical. Like, as much as people say it's fake and whatnot, you know, it's, you know, choreographed, and it's still physical as fuck. Like, it's basically like, I mean, remember when you would wrestle with your friends when you were younger? You always got hurt. Someone always got hurt. I always hurt someone. I know that. So, Jesus, how close it could have been to tragedy. Just by wrestling with my friend, you know, somewhere where I shouldn't have, you know. And that's why, you know, don't try this at home. Yeah, do not try this at home. So, you know, you take your bumps and your bruises, and there's, you know, cracked ribs and this and that, and like really bad injuries that anyone else would be like, yeah, I got to take off work for like a couple months. Like, nope, we got to get back up and get back up out there. So, I guess they show David doing steroids, and then at Kevin's wedding, you know, Kevin enters the bathroom and he hears someone like puking in the toilet, the stall door's closed. And he's like, oh man, bit early for that, right? Like, you know, going hard. And he opens the stall door to find David there puking of blood. And Kevin's like urging him to go to the doctor and get it checked out. And David's like, no, 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 it's fine. You're crazy. I got to go to Japan. He's like, you should not go to Japan. You should go to the hospital. And then they kind of, there's a beat and they both laugh. And it's like, oh man. You know? So there was great, I mean, there was great foreshadowing, great setups and payoffs. You know, we talk about the China cabinet with the weapons that comes back into play at the end. You know, we talk about, there's the scene where Michael has that show that his mom doesn't like, that same dinner where the mom is talking about how the dad was musically inclined and really great on the clarinet. That's when Michael pipes up and says, hey, you know, I'm in a band and we have a show tonight and UT Dallas. And, you know, and the mother's like, nope, you're not going. You're 17. That's a college campus. Can't have you there. And so he sneaks out with his brothers, goes there. And that's where you see, get a better taste of Kerry, because it's been kind of limited up until this point. And like Pam, Kevin says to Pam, you know, we're a lot. Are you sure you want to be part of this? We're a lot. And, you know, that's when Pam points out Kerry did a fucking keg stand and tore off his shirt. And it was just like pounding beers. And the whole time I'm sitting there with my fucking flabby gut, and I'm like, look at these motherfuckers. Just like eating burgers, drinking beers, pounding beers, partying. And like, they're all just fucking cut and shredded. Like, how? And it's like, well, David, steroids. I find that out. Okay. But that's when you get the first taste or hint that Kerry is, you know, going down the wrong path, I guess. They're like, yeah. Pam's like, whoa, Kerry's like pretty intense. And then Kevin's like, oh yeah, he really knows how to put him back. And it's like, well, not just that. So David ends up getting a ruptured intestine in Japan. Yikes. It's like he probably should have just gone to see the doctor and this wouldn't have happened. So Kevin feels guilty that he didn't, I guess, press a little harder on that. And then the postcard, dude. Oof, what a gut punch. You know, Kevin at the funeral, the father's like, take off your sunglasses. No crying. We're men. You got to be the strongest, you know, the blah, blah, blah. And so Kevin sees this postcard. It's a postcard from David saying like, hey, I miss you a lot. You know, I think writing this postcard is dumb because I'm going to be home by the time you read it. And it's like, nope. So that was that was tough. And then fucking Carrie Von Erich takes David's place in the rankings and takes over his spot in this whole feud with Ric Flair. And was it before or after? Maybe this is before. So I forget the timing of it, but Kevin gets a match with Ric Flair and kind of loses his shit. Because is this before or after Michael dies? I mean, it's insane. David dies, ruptured intestine. Their oldest son died. I don't know how or why, I forget. And then Michael gets into wrestling. I don't know the timing of it all, but here's I'm just going to let it all out. The scene that really, I was like, holy fuck, I don't remember that at all. Carrie Von Erich wrestles, I guess, Ric Flair, wins the belt, comes home, and he's sitting there at the table by himself with the belt, just kind of looking at it, kind of touching it. And then Kevin, you know, who had watched this all happen and was like, that should be me out there. Like, I was supposed to be the one next in line. Like, I was initially the one that was going to go rematch with Harley Race, Ric Flair. Like, I was the one who's going to get promoted to NWA and get pushed. And instead, after what happened in the ring post match with Harley Race, no rematch with Harley Race, he went down the totem pole. Like, even the father, like, saying, you're my favorite. You're now my favorite. Now you're my second favorite. You're my third. And you're my fourth. Oh, my God. Ruthless. But that's, you know, you look at a lot of the people, famous people that have become top performers in the entertainment field, I want to say. Sports and entertainment fields. They're pushed by a demanding parent, I feel like, a lot of the time. Or at least that's how it used to be. You know, you think about Todd Marinovich, Tiger Woods, like, it just, you know, they have these parents that are just like, you know, they're not going to settle and they're not going to, like, they don't, you know, you need to not control, bury your feelings. You just need to overcome it. You can't be weak. You got to be strong. So, you know, Kevin's disheartened seeing his brother, Carrie, get the chance that he thought he should have gotten. And him and Carrie don't have the best relationship. Like, him, Kevin and David's relationship were strong and connected. Him and Carrie, not so much. Like, you can see them butting heads a lot of times, a lot of conflict. And so, you know, after David passed, then Carrie took the torch, ends up fighting Ric Flair, winning the belt. And you can see Kevin is like begrudgingly congratulating him and saying, you know, you done good. And then Carrie's like, yeah, it's just like, I don't know. I'm still all amped up. You know, I still got this energy. I think I'm just going to go out. And so Kevin's like, all right. You see him like place the bottle, an empty bottle of beer on the sill, the shelf there as he's going out. And you're like, that motherfucker is going to crash. He's going to do something to absolutely derail his path to success and glory. So I knew that was coming. What happened next, I was just like, not floored, but I was just like, whoa, I do not remember that. So you see him on the motorcycle. He takes off on the motorcycle. You see him tearing down the avenue. And he's a little bleary-eyed, so you can tell, okay, he's probably intoxicated, inebriated. And you see in front of him is like these cop cars with their lights on. And then it's like cut to black. Next morning, I think it's next morning, or like cut to him waking up for the day. Beautifully shot, where we see him roll out of bed. We see him from the back. He grabs a crutch, grabs another crutch, and the bed is blocking kind of his from the quad down. You just see him from the quad up. And so he goes, walks over with his crutches, and then you see him enter the kitchen, but you can only see like the kind of the top half of him. And then finally the lower half is visible in frame, and it's just like, oh, he doesn't have a right foot. Right foot is completely missing. I was just like, oh, whoa, they're taking a lot of liberties with this, but it turns out I think that was right. So the fact that this dude lost his right foot and was still able to go to the WWF and win an Intercontinental Championship is just like incredibly impressive. But it's, after you see how he was raised and what he went through and, what the competition he had with his brothers, like, okay, it starts to make sense, So, that made me, that whole process of him trying to get back on his feet again, poor choice of words. Him trying to walk and run again was like, I felt it. I definitely felt it, and even Kevin's like, man, maybe you shouldn't do this, dude. Like, I don't think you should do, like, Kevin is the most rational, logical person in this whole fucking family. Even early on in the film where, he watches Fritz tear into Michael, be like, what the fuck, Michael, you always fuck up. Like, you can't do anything right, blah, blah. And he's like really laying into Michael for something that doesn't deserve that level of fury. And he goes to his mother and he's like, hey, can you maybe tell dad to go a little bit lighter on Michael? And her response is, which beautifully, like they say it in the beginning and they also say it later on in the movie, and it's just as heart-wrenching in the last part of the movie, but her going, no, that's between the two of them. Like, oh, this is, no, you're the mom, you're not gonna, okay. Like, that was just that was the stance, because even towards the end, it happens again where it's like the mom should have intervened. Kevin should have intervened. There should have been some level of like, let's stand up to this person, or this is a family matter. So you're justified in inserting yourself. I don't know, because it happens again at the end of the movie where Carrie's going off the rails. And Kevin's like calling the dad and being like, hey, I think Carrie's in really bad shape. I told him to go home, but I think you should really pay close attention to him and watch over him, because I think something bad's going to happen. And the dad's like, yeah, that's between the two of you. It's like, this is your fucking son, bro. Like, this is your son. And your other son is saying, like, hey, heads up, I just got a really disturbing phone call. Carrie is like on the edge. Essentially saying you're going to lose your son. Do something about it. And then of course he's like, oh, I'm going to stay out of this between the two of you. Yay, yay. So yeah, Michael ends up getting involved in wrestling and goes up for a drop kick, lands awkwardly on his shoulder, has surgery on the shoulder, but it goes sideways where he gets like sepsis or something. It's the southern hospitals, Florida and Texas mostly. The Gulf Coast, I question their medical expertise. I don't know. His fever spikes, goes into a coma. They're like not sure if he's gonna pull out of it, so oldest son dies. Third oldest son, David, dies. Ruptured intestine. Fourth son hits the pinnacle of success immediately that night. Gets into a horrific motorcycle crash, loses his foot. And now Michael has this bum shoulder surgery that goes awry. And he looks and sounds very off afterwards, to the point where I was like, I would think that, I've never been in a coma, but I don't know much about comas, but I would think that it does have some kind of impact on your brain to the point where like you talk maybe a little bit slower and it takes you a while to get back into the speed of things. So that's what the vibe I was getting. And I think that ultimately maybe the brain damage from the sepsis, is that possible? Ultimately led him down his tragic path where it's like, you know, he feels like he can't play the guitar anymore. So, you know, we saw that scene earlier where like he's playing with his band and he's like crushing it. It was the title of the song was, it was an original song, actually, I Want to Live Forever or something like that. I think it was the name of the main lyric. And he's like having fun and playing the guitar. And then you see him post surgery or post coma, like can't really play the guitar. And he's like, he knows he's not that great at wrestling. And so he's still very sad about David's passing. And so then he takes his life, commits suicide, takes a bunch of pills, goes out in the field, writes, you know, a one sentence suicide note that was just like, something like, I can't be here anymore or something like that. So he takes his life. Carrie gets very successful. Like I said, SummerSlam Intercontinental Championship, comes home, and you know, he ends up getting too heavily into, like, you can see him, you know, here and there doing cocaine, doing painkillers, all that shit. And so he ends up you know, like I said, calling Kevin from some hotel room and being like, I can't do this anymore. They're gonna cut me. I'm only doing house shows now. You know, I feel like I'm, you know, you could tell it's just like in his voice that he's like in bad shape. And that's when Kevin calls his dad. Dad gives him the stupidest response. And so Kevin ends up going back to where they grew up, the family home. Sees a pickup truck with the door open, sees the door open to the house, and then sees a pair of legs sticking out from behind a tree. And that's Carrie Von Erich, who shot himself with the gun that he gave his dad for Christmas. Ugh. And then, of course, the dad comes running over like, what happened? And so that's when Kevin goes berserkerwitz on his dad. And I thought, oh, no, because I don't know Kevin's story. I was like, I'm pretty sure I know Carrie's story. I know how that ends. And it sucks. And I saw it. You can see it coming from a mile away. I didn't know about their oldest son. I didn't know about David or Michael. I was just like, oh, it's just like Carrie. That's a really, you know, I can, you know, whatever. And that's when Kevin's like, oh no, is Kevin now going to succumb to this curse where it's just like not thinking and just act and just reacting with emotion, you know, not talking it out. And it's just like, he was choking his dad. I'm like, is he about to kill his fucking dad? And it just completely go over the edge. But no, he kind of reels back. Interesting. Like even that shot, the opening shot or opening series of shots is his dad back when his dad was wrestling. And he's got that same kind of like the intense look on his face as I think he was choking his opponent in the ring, the dad in black and white. And it mirrors, or is very similar to the look that Kevin gives as he's choking out his dad on the family's farm. And like, where were you? I told you to watch out for him and you didn't, you know, bullshit. So, yeah. That scene, the afterlife scene, that was tough. I don't know how I feel about it. I just, I don't know. Like you basically see Carrie come out. He's got both his feet. So he's super happy about that. He's jumping and he's like, this is great. Gets in a rowboat crossing this pond by the family farm. And on the other side is Michael and David. They hug. They're like, glad you finally came here, brother. And it's just like, I don't know. It didn't sit with me well. It was just like, you guys were so, missed your brother David so much that you were willing, and this is a, you know, a God-fearing family, very religious, right? The mother and the father and all that. So did that have a large part in them thinking like, well, I'm going to join my brother. I miss my brother. I don't want to see my brother again in the afterlife. So I'm going to kill myself, you know, like, and, you know, when David said, glad you finally came, brother, we missed you. It's just like, is this like somehow condoning suicide? Like I don't know if I just didn't like the way they framed it, you know, being like, oh, well, look at this happy ending. So like, this is a happy ending. So you should commit suicide to be with the people you've lost. It almost, I don't know why my head went there, but it was just like, I don't know. This feels weird, off. So yeah, Carrie gone, David gone, Michael gone, you know, oldest brother gone. And so now it's just Kevin. Somehow Kevin's able to pull things together because it was looking bad for him too, where he's like, he's now very paranoid and scared about this curse, which he was in denial about. And now it's like, well, you know, now he's at the point where he thinks it's contagious. He's going to give it to his wife and child. And he ends up selling his, because he was in charge of his father's league. You know, and the announcer, who's his business partner, was saying, hey, like, we had to cut back from 2 shows to 1 show. We got an offer from this competitor. I think you should consider it. And so he brings it up to his dad. His dad's like, if you sell this fucking league that I built, you're never welcome in this house again. You can't pass through that door. And so he ends up selling it, you know, because he's down on his luck, losing money. And this can get him out of the whatever he's like. Apparently the new owner of the league is like, you can wrestle here. And so he's like, yeah, cool. And on their first date, he had mentioned, you know, she's like, what do you see in the future? What does your future hold for you? Where would you like to be in the future? And he's like, I want to be on a ranch. And I want all my family to live there with me, all my brothers. And so one of the final scenes is, they're at this kind of ranch and he's sitting kind of cross-legged, almost like in a yoga meditative pose state. And he's watching his two sons. I mean, this got me. He's watching his two sons. His Pam, the wife, is pregnant with the third. And you can tell that he's kind of freed himself to a certain extent of this curse, right? He's now living, you know, he's got the two boys, the third on the way. He's picking them up from school, off the school bus. You know, they have a pretty big size, decent yard. They're no longer in that cramped apartment. And he's watching them play football, like just tossing the football, tackling each other. And he's basically crying. He's tearing up and crying. And so the sons realize it. And they're like, Dad, are you okay? Ugh, I'm about to cry right now. And he goes, yeah, I'm okay. And they're like, what's wrong? And he goes, well, I used to be a brother, but I'm not a brother anymore. And that is when I just fucking lost it. I was just like, I broke down crying. I was just like, I don't know how this faucet got turned on, but it's not turning off. And I fucking bawled my eyes out, man. That was just hit me so fucking hard. And then they had the song, the original song that Michael played at the college campus, UT Dallas. They had a woman singing it and it was like a kind of a slower version, acoustic version or whatever. And I was just like, and that's not helping things. I'm just like gushing out of my face, just leaking everywhere. Niagara Falls. And I guess I started thinking about my dad and I was just like, you know, apologizing to what? He's not here. And, you know, so it just hit me really hard. And I think I was like, all right, I gotta go to bed. Like, I've officially been bawling like a baby on this couch, talking to my dad who passed away 18 years ago. So, but yeah, I guess it was cathartic. You know, that's something that's like, it's stuck. It's within me somewhere, and it got unlocked in that moment. The fact that he's like, I'm a brother, and I'm not a brother anymore. It's like, well, I know I didn't have brothers, you know, but it's that similar feeling of like you were this thing and now you're not this thing anymore because they were taken away from you prematurely. But that, like, as you know, because I had heard other people that had gone to see it, like Robbie Fox and Clem saw it, I guess, when it was out in theaters, and they were like, you know, it's just as sad as it sounds, but it's still a beautiful, good movie, and I have to agree. And I do like how they ended it. where it's like, okay, he's with his sons. You can tell, like, he's allowed to cry now because he wasn't allowed to cry. His dad didn't allow him to cry. He's allowed to cry now. And he's like, you know, but he still has that within him that I shouldn't cry. Oh, I'm sorry, I shouldn't cry. And the dad's like, and then the dude, oh my God. And I was just like, I thought I could hold it in. Like, all right, I'm not going to cry. And he's like, I shouldn't be crying. I'm sorry. And then the kids go, his two sons go, it's okay. We cry all the time. I was just like, boosh. All came pouring out. It's just like, yeah, I can cry. You're allowed to cry. It's like that Dane Cook bit from, what was it, Vicious Circle? Where he's like, you ever cry? You ever have a really good cry? Where you keep repeating the same thing? I try my best. I did my best. That's what it was for me in that moment. And Zac Efron is Kevin Von Erich. You know? The hair in this movie, Jesus, especially on the Von Erich kids, the boys, it's just like, was that a thing in the 80s, late 70s, early 80s? Where it's just like, I remember Cary Von Erich having pretty baller hair, like awesome, just a fucking horse mane of hair. Gorgeous Fabio-esque hair. And he did in this movie too. But then Kevin Von Erich, it was just like, what the fuck is going on there? He looked like those old school, like, dark times England, like weird straight bang hair jobs. I don't know. It just like, is that his real hair? Or is that a wig? It has to be a wig. So that kind of threw me off. But yeah, so he, the way that they end it is like, that's a great way to end it. And then they kind of fade to black and fade up, and they have a picture. And this picture is Kevin Von Erich on his ranch with all his, you know, was it three, four children? I think they said, and 11 or 13 grandchildren. So there's like, you know, fucking, there's like 20 people in this goddamn photo, and they're all smiling and they're all happy. And like someone, I don't know who, maybe it was one of his sons, is just like absolutely tossed his kid up in the air, like fucking 30 feet, you know, and they just look like they're having the time. And he did what he said he was going to do. You know, and I know that's probably just a movie thing that they put together, and that's not how it actually went down. But I thought that was a great setup and a great payoff that, like, he, I don't want to say beat the curse, but essentially beat the curse. He was able to not succumb to it and not follow the same fate as his brothers. So, good movie, great movie, underrated. And it just sucks because it's like, I wonder what it would have taken. And it's got really great reviews and ratings too, which I guess I should get to that, huh? Yeah, take your time, Neil. Jesus. Great music too. It had Don't Fear the Reaper by Blue Oyster Cult, Thank God I'm a Country Boy by John Denver, Tom Sawyer by Rush, which was, I guess, Carrie's entrance music. We'll get to the ratings in a little bit. How about some trivia first? Some fun facts, yeah? Some fun facts on a very sad movie. The Von Erich family's signature move, The Claw, that's what the movie is named, The Iron Claw, was like the dad's finishing move, right? Where it's basically, you basically grip the guy's head, forehead and head, and you just basically squeeze and squeeze and apply pressure until they tap out. Which, shit, man, I just did it to myself. And it's like, yeah, that does fucking kind of hurt. I know they're acting most of the time, but you can see how it can get like pretty painful pretty quick. Yeah, there are plenty of stories of wrestlers that like go hard. I think it's called wrestling stiff, where like they really do hit people. Like, Kevin's match with Ric Flair, he kind of goes in on Ric Flair a little too hard with the claw. By the way, fucking Ric Flair in this movie. I feel like even non-wrestling fans, people that are not even familiar with wrestling, pretty much know Ric Flair. He gets name checked in rap songs. I mean, like, just watch the 30 for the 30 on the guy. He's an icon. 16-time world champion. Like, he's pretty much right up there with Hulk Hogan. Like, you didn't have to watch wrestling to know who Hulk Hogan was in the 80s. I think the same can be said for Ric Flair even to this day. You know, I think there are kids in college now that know Ric Flair. Everyone knows the woo. That was another nitpicky Neil thing that I nitpicked, was like, they couldn't have got someone a little bit better to play Ric Flair. I looked him up. I don't recognize the actor, but I was like, oh man, I mean, Ric Flair, that should be a pop. That should be a great performance from someone recognizable or someone who just fucking nails Ric Flair impression. Instead, they get this guy who, towards the end of his promo, I think was onto it and getting to it and was almost had it down. But like, for the most part, all the other stuff, I was just like, this is oof. Like, they could have done better there with Ric Flair. But so there was a little bit of a misfire there. And I don't know that Jeremy Allen White was the best decision for Kerry Von Erich. I'll say it. So the claw, which is the finishing move, is used in the film Liar Liar as a father-son bonding experience between Fletcher, played by Jim Carrey, and Max, played by Justin Cooper, multiple times. The actress who plays Max's mom and Fletcher's ex-wife in Liar Liar is Maura Tierney, who played the mom, the Von Erich matriarch. So that was a cool little connection there. Fritz asked Carrey about a wrestler by the name of Hellwig. So wrestling diehards know who that is. He's referring to Jim Hellwig, better known as the Ultimate Warrior. So it's interesting to see that, like, I love that kind of shit. Just like little sprinkles of like, yeah, we're just going to mention it in passing. And oh man, I love that. So those are the two little fun tidbits. Rotten Tomatoes. Okay, so what did the critics say? What are the reviews and ratings? The critics' consensus on Rotten Tomatoes was powerfully acted and profoundly sad. The Iron Claw honors its fact-based story with a dramatization whose compassionate exploration of family ties is just as hard-hitting as its action in the wrestling ring. And I would agree, for the most part. Because it slipped here and there, ever so infrequently slipped into, it could have very easily slipped even further into that kind of after school special TV movie of the week, like melodrama type movies, you know, kind of what was the movie May December that came out, where it's like, that was, it knew what it was. And it was like, it did it to such an extent that it was comedic, right? Cause it was like self-aware of how melodramatic it was. And it really played that up. This was like, could have very easily dipped back into like melodrama, and it would have been a complete turnoff. Like, this is just like any other movie about tragedy that you would see, you know, along these lines, a sports entertainment figure, you know, tragedy. The audience consensus on Rotten Tomatoes is The Iron Claw is a powerfully emotional movie with some outstanding acting in support of a very sad real life story. Yeah. Again, Zac Efron. I wish he got a little more love for this. I think it was just really spot on. So the top critics gave it a 7.1 out of 10 rating. All critics gave it a 7.7 out of 10. Verified audience members, 4.6 out of 5. And all audience, 4.4 out of 5. And I'm closer to the audience on this. I think the IMDb rating was 7.7 out of 10, and I gave it an 8 out of 10. And it's mid-8s. I'd say 8.3. 8.3, 8.4. I'm willing to go that high. So, yeah, I highly recommend it. Even if you're not a wrestling fan, you at least get to see, like, it's not just, like, a bunch of goofy guys in tights. Like, it's a business. And it's an extremely delicate business. it's amazing to think about, like, even when I kind of sort of got back into wrestling, pro wrestling, at least following it, cause I was applying to a job as a writer at the WWE. Like, even then, like, I got back into it a little bit, and you can see like how quickly things can turn from someone that's getting pushed, and then something doesn't click, and it's like drops off the face of the earth. So yeah. And if you are looking to squirt some tears, you know what I'm going to recommend. So that's Iron Claw. And that's the show. That's the episode. I still got to review Fallout. I still got to review Three Body Problem, which I just finished up. I think X-Men 97 might be wrapping up, so I might have to recap that, give my thoughts there. And then we got, there's always Mets and Giants talk, right? Always. And people have been calling for a life episode about life. So I need to get going on that. A lot to talk about, a lot to cover. But for now, you know, those two potent words. Adios, muchachos.